Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, also the author of The Weed Agency. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis to kick off the week for you as usual. We start with the good, and Jim, it might be time to get a little popcorn ready because we might have started to see the beginning of the public distancing of Hillary Clinton from the Obama administration as she obviously considers a 2016 run and the president's current approval ratings are in the tank. The latest example of this comes from The Atlantic in a story by Jeffrey Goldberg, and he talked to Mrs. Clinton about a lot of different things, but one of them, of course, was what's going on with ISIS, and she has this quote: "The failure to help build up a credible fighting force of the people who were the originators of the protests against Assad, there were Islamists, there were secularists, there was everything in the middle, the failure to do that left a big vacuum, which the jihadists have now filled. And on the overall foreign policy front, President Obama is famous for his don't do stupid stuff slogan. Here's what Clinton said about that: great nations need organizing principles, and don't do stupid stuff is not an organizing principle." Jim, fun times.
I suppose the subtitles to Hillary's remarks might as well have been, "If only he had listened to me." which, you know, we don't know exactly what was going on in her head. There are reports that she had been more enthusiastic about arming the Syrian rebels than the president had been. And going back to 2008 and 2007, there was a sense that Hillary was a little more interventionist than Obama was. But overall, you know, look, it's not like she can, you know, now say, "Look, I had nothing to do with U.S. foreign policy for the last couple of years." You can't do that when you're Secretary of State. At any given moment, if she really strongly disagreed with any of the president's decisions, she had the option of resigning in principle. She never did that. I suppose maybe she needed the money, Greg. being dead broke, they just couldn't afford to not have Hillary's income as Secretary of State. It looks like a really convenient interview for her because, you know, she says this. She talks about how one issue is we don't even tell our own story very well these days. You wonder how extensively she defines "these days." Whether she means, you know, "God, my successor Kerry is screwing things up" is the subtext there. Because otherwise, you know, she was our top public diplomat for the last couple of years. And, you know, some of us recall that Obama was supposed to make everybody feel super duper terrific because the world would love us and he wasn't George W. Bush and all that. For better or for worse, I suppose for the better, Hillary makes a really forthright statement in support of Israel. Says that ultimately the civilian casualties in Hamas, in Gaza, are the responsibility of Hamas, and that it's very difficult for Israel to kind of, you know, defend itself when Hamas is hiding amongst civilians. I just kind of wonder, Gray, though, I mean, imagine if she said that a week ago or like 2 weeks ago. I mean, don't you think the world would have just exploded with every anti-Israel voice and all the Democrats, and really it's, you know, the Democratic activist class, it's the grassroots who are much more anti-Israel, much more pro-Palestinian, much more even quasi-pro-Hamas. I think they just would have gone bonkers if she'd said something like this then. Now she says it, but the whole world is focused on Iraq with good reason. And so she manages to be pro-Israel, check the box, without really putting too much of her own popularity at risk.
Two other things in this story that are kind of fun. The White House official statement on this in the Politico version of the story is, "On the broad thrust of our foreign policy, she was fully on board." And in the humorous final note on this, the Obama administration veteran that Mrs. Clinton hired to do the media for her book tour, Tommy Vietor.
Deferring all questions. Dude, it was like 2 years ago. So, there you go.
Dude, when's she available? Dude, what time? How much time can we have?
That's dude, where's my car? Anyway. Dude, maybe we should move on to that second martini.
Dude, I think you're right. Okay, on to the second martini now. And the president, of course, is on vacation. But the president giving this statement to a reporter as he departed from the White House as to why the U.S. did not leave troops in Iraq after the end of operations in 2011 and whether that is now contributing to our problem.
So let's just be clear. The reason that we did not have a follow-on force in Iraq was because the Iraqis were, a majority of Iraqis did not want U.S. troops there. And politically, they could not pass the kind of laws that would be required to protect our troops.
So that's the current version of the story, but here's how it came up in the third presidential debate in 2012, with Mitt Romney raising the issue with the president in the debate moderated by Bob Schieffer.
You and I agreed, I believe, that there should have been a status of forces agreement.
That's
did
not
you?
True.
Oh, you didn't want a status of forces agreement?
No, what I would not have done is left 10,000 troops in Iraq that would tie us down. That certainly would not help us in the Middle East. This is a few weeks ago that you indicated that we should still have troops in Iraq.
No, I didn't. I'm sorry, that's a major speech. I indicated that you failed to put in place a status of forces agreement at the end of the conflict that existed.
Here's one thing I've learned as Commander-in-Chief. You've got to be clear, both to our allies and our enemies, about where you stand and what you mean. Now, you just gave a speech a few weeks ago in which you said we should still have troops in Iraq. That is not a recipe for making sure that we are taking advantage of the opportunities and meeting the challenges of the Middle East.
Jim, we just keep refusing to let him be clear.
You know, as I'm listening to that, you know, for the first time in a long while, Greg, that's a real word salad there, isn't it? I mean, you know, we have to take advantage of the opportunity. Wait, what opportunities are we taking advantage of? Like, what about Iraq then, now? Like, we have the opportunity to take our troops out? You have to be clear. You need to be clear to, you know, blah, blah, blah. It just is like mush. And yet somehow everyone kind of nods as if they're hearing some sage assessment of circumstances. A couple things jumping out about this. You know, Obama may have a molecule of truth to it when he says, look, you know, I can only do this in cooperation with the Iraqis, and the Iraqis may not have wanted the status of forces agreement under, you know, circumstances the U.S. like. Saturday morning, he kept going on and on about protecting our troops from prosecution while they're operating overseas, which is terrific. I also point out this is why the U.S. forces don't join international peacekeeping forces. We don't work under the U.N. and things like that. I'm glad to see the left has now finally come around to our perspective on this. I missed that memo when all of a sudden that was, you know, they suddenly agreed we were right all along. Secondly, look, you're the president of the United States, and you have a whole bunch of troops in their country, and if you really want something, you can get something if it's a high enough priority for the United States. So he said, no, we said a majority of Iraqis. Well, how about that semi-autonomous Kurdish region? The Kurds have always liked us. The Kurds have, you know, been going back decades. So the idea that, you know, there was no option, and the U.S. had no option to have any military in Iraq whatsoever, and then none of this was Obama's idea, is a little too much coming from the guy who's been running against the Iraq war since the moment he debuted in national politics, so going back to the 2004 Senate campaign. Now, the other thing which maybe I'll give the president a molecule or two of sympathy on is that, look, very much the American people did not want to have any troops left in Iraq. And that's, you know, kind of an understandable response after years of the Iraq war not going well, to throw up your hands and say, ah, you know, the hell with this. It's such a mess. Ah, this is never going to go anywhere. Why are we wasting our time? We've made too much of a sacrifice in blood and treasure. That's understandable from a gut level. But as we're seeing with the rise of ISIS, sometimes something that feels good in your gut at the time is not actually the wisest course of action. And this, you know, when you completely withdraw from an area, bad things tend to happen. Just ask the South Vietnamese. So the idea that, you know, this is not an unbelievably unforeseen set of circumstances, and being a leader sometimes means telling the American people that something that they think they want, they don't really want, because they don't see the consequences that would flow out of a U.S. Withdrawal like that. Now, we have seen it in our hands, and we're having to intervene in order to prevent a genocide. So Obama's being a little too cute here. This is a good chance for kind of a teachable moment and kind of a learning moment for this president to realize that, look, you can't leave, you know, as tempting as it may be to leave a country and say, to hell with you, Iraq, we're tired of your problems. It's not our problem. Take care of yourself. Well, no, they can't. Or I guess you should say genocide and you know, massacres are the way the world solves its problems without Western intervention. There are 170,000 people who have died in the Syrian civil war. Maybe we decide that's okay, but we should recognize the consequences there.
Very depressing. And if you thought that was depressing, let's go to the third martini, because the chaos in Iraq is our third martini. And Jim, there's just so many different tentacles to all of this. You've got Maliki being upset that the U.S. is now directly arming the Kurds to some extent. Inside Iraq, you've got the Iraqi president. Extra credit for anyone who actually knew who that was. His name's Fuad Masum. He's now decided that Maliki's out and is nominating the deputy parliament speaker to form a new government. Maliki is not recognizing this. You've obviously got tales of atrocities from the beheading of children to starvation on mountains. There's mixed results in terms of our humanitarian drops. You've got John McCain saying we never should have left, and we're looking at the same thing in Afghanistan if we don't change course there. You've got David Brooks saying on the Sunday morning chat shows that you can't stop ISIS from the air, which obviously leaves an implication nobody wants to accept. So good times heading into this story this week.
Yeah. Sometimes we have good crazy martinis and sometimes we have very bad crazy martinis. The only thing that's, you know, the reason this qualifies as a crazy martini is I'm looking at Maliki and just the whole crowd out there and kind of left scratching our head. How do you guys decide that now is the right moment for everybody to start having this gang pile, vicious internal dogfight about control? Wouldn't ISIS be this unifying force? It's probably too lighthearted a metaphor observation, but Greg, do you watch Game of Thrones?
I have seen it. I haven't watched it regularly.
So there's these like terrible ice monsters coming from the north called the White Walkers. And every once in a while, they'll spend an episode. They'll make very clear, yes, these are terrible, terrible ice monsters that are coming, and they're coming further south, and they're on their way. And they'll destroy and eat and terrorize everyone who's coming towards them. And no one seems to be doing anything about it. And everybody's all fighting over who gets to be on the Iron Throne or something. And you keep left scratching it. Somebody should really do something about that. And most of the characters have been told about it. This is no longer a rumored threat. But everyone's so busy fighting over the throne. And I kind of wonder if this is where Martin is going with his story on this. That, you know, everyone is too focused on controlling their kingdom that they ignore the threat coming from outside the kingdom. And lo and behold, it seems like we're watching that right in front of us. I mean, on paper, you want to talk about the groups who are anti-ISIS. It's basically everyone in the world except ISIS. It's us. It's the Iraqi government. It's the Kurds. Even Iran apparently, you know, finds these guys to be too dangerous. Technically, Al-Qaeda opposes them, although, you know, we would never do that. The Jordanians, the Turks, even Bashar Assad. I mean, there is a chance for a, you know, really bizarre alliance, anti-ISIS alliance here that the U.S., you'd think you want to at least explore. Hey, can we get everybody beating the hell out of ISIS for the near future? Instead, we have the Iraqis all deciding now is the time to launch a coup and counter coup and all that stuff. And you wonder if there'll still be a government in Baghdad by the time ISIS arrives.
Jim, if that coalition comes together, can we use the Mos Eisley Cantina music every time we refer to it?
There we go. Well, it's kind of like, you know, in sometimes, you know, when the supervillain becomes a hero for the sale, you know, the X-Men work with Magneto against the Sentinels or something. You know, that's every once in a while. We work with Stalin in World War II. We can work with forces we do not find palatable in order to deal with a larger threat. And even if you're ISIS, you might disagree about what qualifies as the biggest threat in the Middle East. They certainly seem like the most immediate and bloody threat. And if I could build a temporary coalition amongst all of my former enemies, I'd go with that option. And it appears that none of that's happening in part because the Iraqis are too busy fighting amongst themselves, even though literally the barbarians are at the gate.
Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.